Wednesday, March 26, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you and your family and your friends are staying healthy this week. We are happy to have you here with us today. And here in the States, at least, we are looking forward to a holiday weekend. Yes, kids, because this coming weekend will be Memorial Day weekend. You know, each year here in the United States, Americans observe the federal holiday, Memorial Day, which is celebrated on the last Monday in May. Now, Memorial Day honors and remembers all men and women who have died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. But Memorial Day is also a day to remember just all of our loved ones who have passed away. And we know we've lost a lot of good people over this past year. Now, traditionally on Memorial Day, the flag of the United States of America is raised quickly to the top of the staff. Then they solemnly lower it to half staff, where it remains until noon. At noon, they then raise it to full staff for the remainder of the day. When the flag is at half staff, the position is in remembrance of the more than 1 million men and women who have given their lives for our country. Now, raising the flag at noon actually signifies our nation is still alive. The country is resolved not to let those sacrifices be in vain, and we want to rise up in their honor and continue to fight for liberty and justice for all. And of course, in the United States, Memorial Day also traditionally marks the beginning of summer. So, as Memorial Day is approaching, maybe we all take a minute to stop and consider some that we have lost in our past, some that we have lost just in the past year. We know there have been many, many lost. Now, here at the Daily Dose, we are actually going to spend a little bit of time today remembering some things in sports that we have lost. And when we remember these things, it's not just that we lost them temporarily. We have lost some things in sports. We're never going to get them back again. I want you to think about some of the things that we've lost in sports. I mean, in football, wide receivers getting down in a three-point stance, that's never coming back. So happy Memorial Day to wide receivers getting down in a stance as they line up on the line of scrimmage. We're never seeing that again. Major League Baseball batters being embarrassed about striking out? Oh, that's never coming back. They wear that badge with pride these days. They don't even care. They go up and swing. It is home run or strikeout. There is no in-between whatsoever. I don't think we're ever going to see basketball shorts that have the belts built into them. I don't think we're ever going to see those again. Happy Memorial Day to NFL fullbacks. You know, back in the day, fullbacks, a lot of times, were the primary ball carriers. You think of guys like Jim Brown, Marion Motley, Franco Harris, Jim Taylor, Larry Zonka, John Riggins. Those guys were fullbacks. They were big, strong guys. A lot of times, they lined up in the front of the formation, and they hit the hole, and they hit it hard. A lot of times, though, they actually had the ball. Then, we started to see the fullback position change. They became the blockers. If you're going to line up in the front of the formation, we're going to use you to block people out of the way for the halfback behind you. And so we had blocker fullbacks, guys like Tom Rathman and Daryl Moose Johnston, Larry Centers, even guys like Rocky Blyer. They were more blocker fullbacks. Now, I mean, think of the NFL right now. Name a fullback. Yeah, they don't exist anymore. So happy Memorial Day to fullbacks, because I don't know that we're ever going to see them in football again. You know what else doesn't exist anymore? Barefoot kickers in football. And I realize I might be aging myself a little bit by talking about that, but if you're not old enough to remember, back in the early days of football, you just had straight on kickers. They just kicked it straight on with their toe. You booted the ball as hard as you could. Hopefully you hit it flush with your toe and it just went straight. Probably didn't go that far. Then you started to see some soccer style kickers coming in the late 60s, early 70s. But then in the 80s, there was this small group of NFL kickers coming out. Guys like Tony Franklin and Rich Carlos and Mike Lansford. And they came into the NFL saying that by taking off their shoe and their sock and kicking the ball completely barefoot, that somehow it allowed them to feel the leather better and that they would be even more accurate. So you would see these guys running out onto the field with one bare foot, sometimes in snow, to kick a field goal or an extra point. And it turned out it wasn't really all that accurate. They really weren't that great of kickers. Barefoot kickers, though, they are no more. Happy Memorial Day to them. Hand-checking in the NBA seems to be dead and buried these days. You aren't allowed to breathe on opposing players now, let alone put your hand on them as they're dribbling up the floor. Those days are over. We also don't see NCAA men's basketball teams where we like know every kid. You might remember the days of teams from maybe UCLA, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan, Kansas, UNLV, Duke, Indiana, where you could name probably like at least their starting five. Now? Oh, good luck with that. You can barely name one kid, let alone all five. Maybe by the end of the tournament, you know, two or three kids on a roster, but five kids in college hoops? No chance. You maybe know five kids in the country, not on just one team though. Those days are over. So happy Memorial Day to NFL's greatest hits videos. If you ever used to watch those are never coming back. Happy Memorial Day to Monday Night Football being the big primetime NFL event because that now belongs to Sundays. Happy Memorial Day to Major League Baseball interleague play existing only during the World Series. We know they got rid of that years ago. Those things are gone forever. We're never going to see them again. Finally, I think we all know we're never going to see this again. I'd like to wish a happy Memorial Day to LeBron James ever getting touched in any way and not hitting the floor like he just landed on a landmine.
It is embarrassing!
Because we are clearly never, ever going to see that again. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us something in sports that you miss that just doesn't exist anymore. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Doesn't have to be about something you miss in sports. Maybe you're bored. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a comment. We have been hearing from a number of listeners lately. If you want to talk sports, feel free to drop us a line and send in what you have. We will always take the time to get you an answer. We might end up using what you send on the show. Hey, and as long as you're doing that online shopping, which we all know we're still doing, be sure to stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. We actually have a few designs over there for you to pick from. We've got our Daily Dose standard gear over there. We've got our Daily Dose football and basketball logos over there. Couple of things you can choose from. But if you need a t-shirt, maybe a sweatshirt, maybe you want a hoodie, you can pick whatever color you want and you can get some Daily Dose gear that you know you need. So make sure you stop by tpublic.com because they're always doing sales. They're always doing promotions. They will get those items to you very, very quickly. Today on the show, I have got something extra special for you this week because longtime friend of the show and longtime basketball coach Russ McKinstry is going to be stopping by today. You know, Coach Mack coached basketball for years, but it's not just that because he was also a teacher. He was an administrator. He was an athletic director. In fact, he's still a district athletic director right now. This guy has lived sports. He taught sports. He understands sports better than most anyone I know. And you know, we've tried to get together over the past few months, but either I was busy or out of town or he was busy or out of town. So we haven't been able to talk to Coach Mack lately, but he is stopping by this week. In fact, I don't want to waste any more time. We have a lot of things to cover with him. I want to talk some NFL. I want to talk some NBA. I've got some questions about college hoops for him. We have Coach Mack on the Daily Dose hotline right now. So let's go ahead and start talking to him right now. Joining us right now, a good friend of the show, a guy that we have been fortunate enough to have on the show here and there. But Russ McKinstry has coached high school basketball in Colorado, Kansas, and Arizona in his career. He won over 400 games. He won two state titles. He set a number of players off to play at the collegiate level. He sent players to go on to play at the professional level. Coach Mack, thank you so much for stopping by. We always love picking your brain when we get a chance.
Oh, it's been too long, Coach Daly. It's great to hear your voice and happy to be back in touch with you. And yeah, what a year we've been through, and but we're coming out of it, and things are looking very positive and trending in the right direction.
Coach, it has been a wild year. My goodness. We talked, I know, last March, and just everything had just kind of hit. Things were getting crazy. We have seen a lot of wild, crazy things over the last year. How are you doing? How's the family doing? Is everybody in your life doing okay?
You know, we're fortunate, and everybody seems to be doing really well. We're all healthy. We're all employed, and, you know, don't have any complaints except, you know, we're tired of wearing masks and social distancing. So we're really excited to see some of those things going away and life becoming normal again.
I'm assuming working in a school district, I'm assuming you're all vaxxed up and that's all a done deal now.
Yeah, you know, we are up here in Fort Collins, up north here. We really have made the transfer from a lot of the COVID protocols to where things have really opened up, and things that were running, activities, athletic events, seem to be back to normal. So
good.
Yeah, it definitely is not a distant memory yet, but things really do seem to be changing for the better for all of us.
Coach, we've undergone a worldwide pandemic, something that, I mean, I don't know that any of us even thought about or considered. It's been challenging. Some of it's been rewarding. There have been some good to some bad. Good or bad, what are some things you've learned over this last year?
I think maybe everybody hopefully has gained a greater appreciation for what we had, what was available to us, what the opportunities we had exposure to. I think now people realize how lucky and fortunate we are to live in a great country and in a great state that provides so many exciting opportunities, regardless of what your passion is. I think everybody has learned how fortunate we are. And if you haven't learned that and you didn't feel like you were missing out on a lot of the things that we'd love to do in Colorado, then there's probably something wrong with you. You know, your perspective isn't where it needs to be, because, you know, we just went through some really difficult months where, you know, people were angry, they were frustrated, there weren't answers, there wasn't really any right answers, as we know. Everything was just kind of based on speculation and opinion. And like you said, we hadn't been through a pandemic in our lifetime. You know, the last one was in 1918 or whatever with the Spanish flu. So, you know, this was new for all of us. And like we always talk about, Coach, some people don't handle adversity very well. And during the last 15, 16, 17 months, I think a lot of people were to be commended for how they handled the adversity that we've been through. And you also have a segment of society that just didn't handle it very well and really struggled, unfortunately, with the adversity that they had to overcome. And obviously, it's legit in some cases with people passing away and people losing their jobs and people getting sick and people losing their businesses. I mean, just horrible things that have happened and transpired. But it's so cool to see the people that have overcome adversity or handled it in a proper way and how they've come out of some really dark times better because of the adversity that they face. So I think that just, you know, correlates with what we're doing here at the high school level with high school students and athletic experiences. These kids have really shown a lot of strength of character and resiliency and persistence and tenacity, all those things that you'd love to teach kids that's going to be really important for them later in life. They really have shown a high level of all those qualities, which really, you know, makes me very proud to be part of the school system and the educational world and what we do to try and get these young guys, kids, ready for the next step into adulthood.
Coach, you bring up some really, really interesting points there. And a couple of things that I know that I've learned. Well, I've learned one, that narcissism is at an all-time high. We talk ourselves into a lot of strange things during these times. But you mentioned something really specific. You talked about how people have handled this adversity. And one of the things we talked about a year ago, you talked about here on the show. You said there are people in this world that need to be shepherds to the people who are kind of lost. I have kind of learned over this past year, we have some shepherds out there and we have a lot of people that aren't capable of doing that. Those shepherds, those people that kind of guide us and say, hey, we're going to be okay. It's going to be all right. Let's keep moving forward. Those people to me have been completely undervalued for years. But during this thing, we kind of saw them. We need those people. We need those people to say, hey, it's going to be all right. They're there. It's going to be okay. Because people started to scatter and go crazy and lose their minds.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Those people that have outstanding leadership skills and have the ability to maintain composure and emotional intelligence and keep even keeled during the worst of times, you know, those people obviously had to rise to the top and help us through all these hard times. And you never know exactly who those people are going to be. And, you know, from watching some of our political leaders, some of our executives at the corporate level, you know, entertainment business, sports, you're always very surprised at who emerges. And sometimes you're very disappointed in who doesn't handle that like you thought they might be able to handle it. So, yeah, it was a great learning opportunity, I think, for all of us. I've always said that, you know, we've talked before many times about my experience with cancer and how that actually made me better. And I think if you keep all this perspective, the last year and a half with the pandemic, I think if we all could learn from it and come out of this better because of it, really, it serves its purpose. And if you don't take that approach, then what was it all about? I mean, why'd we have to go through all this if you're not going to utilize it to become better personally as a society? And, you know, hopefully that's where people are at, is that they're not bitter, angry, frustrated about something that, first of all, they can't control. And secondly, you know, you can't go back and change it. So let's make the best of it and let's move on.
Coming back, we still have a ton to talk to Coach Mack about. Does he think we have done a good job of doing what is best for our kids during this pandemic? Plus, we still need to get over to some actual sports. We discussed the shot clock at the high school basketball level. Could that be coming to Colorado? A high school kid says he is going to sit out his senior year of football to get ready for college. Plus, I want to get Coach Mack's thoughts on March Madness this past year. We are going to get to all those things when we get back. Right now, let's continue our conversation with Coach Russ McKinstry. Coach, you spend your life working with young people, working with kids, helping kids get better, helping kids become educated, become stronger, become adults eventually. I feel like the narrative for years among educators, among people in government has always been, hey, it's all about the kids. We have to take care of the kids. This pandemic, there was a little bit of a feeling, at least to me, and maybe this is just me on the outside looking in. I know people like you are out there, but it seemed like kind of the general consensus was, okay, screw the kids. We've had enough of the kids. Let's worry about the adults. And the kids, if they drop out of school and if they turn to, you know, drugs or alcohol, or if they commit suicide, you know what? We need to worry about the adults here. And it kind of feels like the kids on some level, not everybody, not all of them, we kind of took the focus off of the kids. The kids are the ones we're supposed to be focusing on, right?
No, and that's a great perspective and a great viewpoint. You know, one of my sources of frustration probably in the last 10 years, maybe even 20 years, Coach, has been we've kind of lost that perspective. We're just, you know, I just think we've evolved into a very selfish, entitled society. And that doesn't start with kids. Kids are kids. Right. You know, I've been doing this for almost 40 years. And to me, kids haven't changed at all. But their adult parents or people that lead the kids, they have changed. And I think what you just mentioned is very accurate and very honest. I think something that I really, really noticed in regards to that was, you know, I just really think that adults in general have really forgotten how significant a connection athletics or activities provides to these kids, and they have devalued that connection. And with some of the actions that took place over the past year, I really got the sense that people had forgotten that so many of us, me included, if I don't have that connection going for me with the school that I attend, if you don't give me something to connect to that building, to that experience, then I see no value or worth in participating in that experience. And I think you saw that with our kids. We lost so many kids that just have disappeared because that connection was broken and never reestablished. And we had too many adults that thought, what's the big deal? So you don't get to play football. So you don't get to sing in your school play. So you don't get to go to band and get the concert experience. What's the big deal? Whatever. That is so untrue and unfounded, because if I don't have that, and I can speak from personal experience, then I'm not going to attend. I'm not going to go to class unless you give me that opportunity to have that extracurricular opportunity, that extension of the classroom opportunity. You're not going to see me in school because I'm too mature. I haven't gained a value of education and what it offers because I'm young, I'm stupid, I'm immature. But if you let me play sports and then in order to play sports, or if I can be in the school play and I have to keep my grades up, okay, I get it. I'll come. I'll do what you tell me to do. And then the beauty of our system is by the time you get to college, you start to figure those things out. Because you've been kept in that system by these extracurricular opportunities, you stay in the system until you're smart enough, mature enough. And you finally, the light bulb goes on and that connection becomes important to you. So what I've seen over the past, 18 months is that we have lost thousands upon thousands upon thousands of kids who are in that same mind frame where they haven't matured enough yet to really understand the value of how important academics is and why you have to get those good grades. But they're going to stay in the system because they have something that they're passionate about that connects them to their classroom. And by golly, we've been saying that, we've been giving it lip service for years and years and decades, but I don't think people really truly believe that. And now we are seeing the consequences of not being all in on that concept. And we have lost, thousands of kids that will probably never come back to the system. And what are those kids going to do? That's what kind of scares me about coming out of COVID is, okay, we have to gather the lost ones up and get them back on track because we've lost so many.
Well, and that's what scares me too. It's not what's happening now. It's what's happening in the next few years coming, because we're going to have some lost, misdirected kids. It feels like there's so many people, and you know this to be true, there's so many people, especially kind of, I guess, at the administrative level, the executive level, who have kind of acted like, well, the classroom is the only place that you can learn things. No, mm-hmm. It's not. In fact, most of us learned a lot less in the classroom than we did elsewhere. Maybe it was the hallway. Maybe it was the gymnasium. Maybe it was the football field. Maybe it was the theater. But most of us learned more there than we ever did the classroom. But we kind of devalued those other learning experiences. Those, to me, are the most important ones. So, yeah, I'm glad that you said that. I think you nailed that. And I do. I worry about this era, their future as adults, because what are these kids going to possibly be as adults? They're kind of playing behind a stacked deck now.
Yeah, that experience of all the life's lessons you learn by being part of an athletic team or part of a concert band or marching band or whatever you choose that falls out of the realm of actual core curriculum instruction. There's just in our school district of 30,000 students. We have 80 to 85% of our students are connected to an athletic team or to an activity club. And for the last year and a half, almost 2 years, that opportunity, that connection has been very minimal at best. And the guidance and, the personal relationships that you build, not only with the coaches, but with your peers, your teammates, that is, invaluable in the developmental process of young females and males. So we've lost, there's a huge gap in there where they've just lost, that experience, that learning opportunity. And how do you make up for lost time? How do any of us make up for lost time, especially when you're talking about a chunk of time that is that significant. So yeah, it you definitely see it as we head back into fall. I think you'll really start to see the national headlines about, you know, the amount of mental illness with teenagers, the amount of dropout rates, the students that have transferred to online learning and now will probably lack some of the socialization skills it takes to go out into the real world and function properly. I think those are all going to become studies and headlines that we're all going to be looking at and scratching our head of, okay, how are we going to solve this problem? Because we got some major issues.
Coach, we're going to pivot and head into sports. I know we bring you on to get a lot of different things from me, but I want to ask you this. We're starting to see fans returning to venues. We're starting to see some really good things. We're starting to see some really encouraging things. Have you been to any, you know, big games yet? Have you been to any, you know, MLB games, anything like that? Would you go if the opportunity was there?
You know, I would go in a heartbeat. In fact, I miss my major college professional sports things that I used to regularly attend. As you know, I'm a pretty big fan of going in person and you know, in fact, I wouldn't hesitate to go except for right now. They got dang traffic on I-25 between Fort Collins and Denver. So chaotic and bad, and which is a good thing because people are out again. You know, we've got people moving around, but, if I had easy access to the Rockies, even though they're, you know, very painful to watch, there's nothing like being at a athletic event in person. So yeah, I would not hesitate. Can't wait for college football. I'll be going to CSU games, CU games, Bronco games. You know, if there were more tickets available, I'd be going to the Nuggets playoff games. I have no hesitancy in getting out. You know, I'm fortunate. I think a lot of people are fortunate to be fully vaccinated and you know, I am very ready to get back out and be part of the crowds that attend these events.
I am too, and I can't wait for it. I am looking forward. I don't know that I've ever looked forward to a college or NFL season like I am this season. Yeah. When we can start to put some of this stuff in our rearview mirror and get back to some normalcy. Coach, I want to talk a little bit about high school sports before we get into, you know, everything we're going to talk about today. Beginning with the 2022-23 season, they're saying a 35-second shot clock will be permitted in high school basketball games by state association adoption. A proposal for a national rule mandating a shot clock has not been approved, but they're saying that you could approve it state by state. Do you think this is going to happen? Are we going to get a shot clock at the high school level finally?
You know, I kind of stay on top of that topic quite a bit. And try. I think the last I heard, I think we're probably up to about 14 states out of the 50 that were going to adopt it or have already adopted it. I would love to see it in Colorado. I just think that it helps with the progression of the high school athlete to the collegiate game. And, you know, it makes it kind of seamless transition of that concept being used. And, you know, and I just, you know, I don't think very rarely would that shot clock be involved in a situation where it was violated. But I think it would add more to the game that I enjoy as opposed to occasionally run across the team that will take a possession and try and milk it for a minute or two. And in a 32-minute basketball game at the high school level, if you run into that team that is really good at that, you know, they can really reduce your playing time in a game of basketball from, you know, 32 minutes to basically making it a 16-minute game. And I just feel bad for kids because it's really cheating the opportunity to really experience what I think basketball should be played like. So I'm all in favor of that 35-second shot clock. When you specifically talk about Colorado, as you know, Dales, Colorado is a very low-level basketball state, unfortunately. Yeah. And we have a lot of athletic directors, administrators who will feel that the additional cost of, you know, $4,000 to $5,000 for the equipment and the additional cost of paying somebody to operate the shot clock, which would probably run you $50 a game, you know, and they'll look at it as, well, what are we going to do with lower level junior varsity games, C level, if you have to operate it during those games, which you should, sure, then that's going to cost me more. So as usual, we will probably take the lazy approach to this in Colorado. We will define it by financial ramifications, and we'll drag our feet to approve it. So I don't think it'll come to Colorado for a while.
Okay. And I kind of had that same thought, but I wanted to make sure, run it by an expert here, because I was like, I can't see Colorado stepping up and actually doing something like that. I was hopeful because it would help these kids. But, you know, as usual, it's not usually about the kids as much as they say it is. Coach, there's a story coming out of Texas I want to get your thoughts on. Jaden Blue, one of the top-ranked running backs of the 2022 class, said he will sit out his senior season of high school football in 2021 to prepare himself for college. Blue is going to be a Texas Longhorn next year. Coach, is that what's coming? Kids in college are already sitting out for the NFL. Now kids, in high school are sitting out for college? Are kids in grade school going to start sitting out for the high school? I don't even understand it. Are we going to see kids like announcing their college in like sixth grade and then just sitting out until then? I don't get it.
You know, unfortunately, that's funny that you mentioned that. Unfortunately, I have seen it start to happen already, in Fort Collins, Colorado, where we don't get that many high level college prospects. But yeah, we have had a few, and I definitely am starting to feel that mentality in a variety of sports, both on the female side and male side. I think it's here. I think it was just the other day they announced the major signings of a couple juniors in high school to a new professional league for the development of high school kids who will be paid sometimes seven figures to sign with that league in order to bypass both their senior year in high school and college in order to be developed and get paid while they're being developed. You know, I just, it's coming, Dells. You know, like I've already said, and we've talked about it before too, that the European model, you know, we're slowly transitioning to the European model of how high school youth sports are operated. I don't think there's any way to stop that. I just think it's a natural pathway that, sports evolves into because of money, because of the business side of athletics where there's so much money to be had by training students, and you and I know about that because we've done it together. And now I think it's just becoming very common, and people see the lucrative side of how to run a business and make your career out of working with kids and youth athletics, which is great, but it also has its, you know, like we say, every decision has a consequence. So when you go down that road, the consequence is going to be the importance of high school athletics. Middle school athletics is probably going to continue to dwindle year by year, and eventually we probably won't have it anymore.
Unfortunately, I think that's the direction it's going. It just feels like that's starting to fade away. Even now, you're seeing kids opt in for club sports over their high school team, which would have never happened in our day. I get it. I understand it. And yet, somehow, I don't always like it. Coach, we missed you during college hoop season. We were busy. A lot of things were happening. But I was so happy to see the NCAA tournament just take place this year. Those kids actually got to play. I know there was some pushback against even having it. Those kids don't get that time over again. I was so happy to see them get to play, even though it was a little bit different. But how great was it just to have March Madness back this year?
Oh, yeah. It definitely was something that was a positive, and it was done so well. You know, they did the bubble so well there in Indianapolis. March Madness is my favorite time of the year. You know, that experience, whether you're in person or just watching on TV, you know, really helped the pain. And I hate to say the word suffering, but there were a lot of people suffering during that time that made things doable, gave us something to hang on to. And it was a great tournament as well. So, you know, I'm so thankful that that was done by the NCAA, and so thankful that it was done in such a professional, safe, considering, you know, the safety of the players and the coaches and how they handled that and how they kind of created that bubble like the NBA did when the bubble was used by the NBA. I think it just is a great example. If you put your mind to it, you really can do just about anything you want to do in this country. We have the resources, we have the creativity, we have the people to do it. It's just a matter of committing to it.
Coach, I know Gonzaga came up a little bit short, but the job that Mark Few has done up there, is so impressive to me. Get a little Catholic school in Eastern Washington to the point where they're the big favorite. That's incredible. He has done such an amazing job. Gonzaga has like 7,000 students. And in the Final Four, everyone was acting like, man, I don't know if poor little 45,000 student UCLA can even hang with those guys. What a job Mark Few has done at Gonzaga.
Yeah, I put him at the top of my favorite coaches for sure. That I just love the way he handled himself. Class act, humble, extremely sharp. Yeah, I mean, obviously that personality comes through during the recruiting process because hitting kids to go to Spokane, Washington, like you said, out in Eastern Washington, there's really no reason for a high level, top tier talent to go there unless they know they've got an incredible leader and coach. So yeah, I mean, he's unbelievable. You know, he could be anywhere in the NCAA. He'd probably be anywhere in the NBA because he's just a natural born leader who, obviously is made of all the right stuff. So yeah, I have extreme respect and just love that guy.
Coach, I got one more thing I want your thoughts on in college hoops. Scott Drew wins it all at Baylor. That is as impressive a rebuild job as we have probably ever seen in the history of sports. Remember, when he went to Baylor, what all was going, they had one kid that had murdered another kid on the team.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to play out of conference games. Coach, you have rebuilt some programs from the ground up. What's the toughest part of flipping a program like that and getting that program to start turning in the right direction? Because what he did was incredible.
Well, I think the hardest thing, but the most important thing, as you know, is trust. You know, you have to establish a culture of trust. And by establishing trust, you can get kids to come together as a group. You get them to believe in the ability to accomplish something bigger than themselves. And the only way they can do it is by sacrificing to help the team be better than, you know, than just one or two individuals. You have to each be willing to sacrifice and trust in each other and trust your coach that, hey, you might have intentions of going to the NBA and earning a living playing basketball. But in order to do that, you have to trust your coach, you have to trust your teammates, and you have to sacrifice a big part of your individual wants and needs in order to be part of a program. That's, you know, sounds like, well, okay, no big deal, but that's extremely hard to pull off because of the many, many voices that these kids have in their head and are a part of their lives. Parents, agents, alumni, friends. You know, they are hearing so many things and it's all revolving around the word I. So you have to get that mind frame change from I to we. And that is so hard to do. And you have to be not only a master at psychology, but you know, you have to be an expert in the game of basketball. You have to be an expert in building a personal relationship. You have to be a master at treating them all fairly, not equally, but you have to treat them all fairly. And it, you know, those dynamics, when you have, you know, 10 to 14 kids who have all been pampered and told that they are the best thing that's ever walked through their halls at their particular school or in their community, and getting them to make that transformation into, you know, somebody that's part of a team, that is so hard to do. So yeah. And the Drew family, obviously, I mean, Homer Drew and Bryce and the coach of Baylor, those guys, you know, they have been doing that for decades. And, so Papa Drew, you know, Coach Drew, the forefront of that family, obviously taught his sons very well because his sons are made of all the right things.
Yes, he did. And that was actually one of those stories that you couldn't help but cheer for, even if you weren't cheering for Baylor. Man, that was impressive stuff. Coach, we talking about doing things the right way and teaching kids the right way. Want to transport ourselves over to the other side of those things. Let's talk some NBA. Because the NBA
world
playoffs.
Of difference.
Right. World of difference. The NBA playoffs are now underway. I want to get your thoughts on a few teams because the Brooklyn Nets are stacked. James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, even on paper, the Nets should be the team to beat in the East, and yet there are teams over there. I could totally see beating them. Do the Nets concern you? Are you confident in that team? What do you think of the Brooklyn Nets?
I watched them play their game just the other day. I don't know, it was 2 days ago, whenever it was. They played horrible, and yeah, they're out of sync, and they still, beat the Celtics by 17 or 18, whatever it was, and they look horrible doing it. I would have to say they should win. I think they will win when you can play as poorly as they did. And their three, superstars all had moments, but none of them were really clicking. They weren't playing well together. You could tell they're out of sync. They're rusty, just kind of feeling themselves out a little bit. And they still easily won. Yes, I would pick them to win it, but obviously there's chinks in the armor there too, where I probably wouldn't go to Vegas putting money down on it. Right. I don't feel that confident. But if you're just asking me to analyze it from afar, I would say the Nets should win it, and I would say it should be the Nets and the Lakers.
Yep, that was the other team I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, in the NBA, as you know, talent trumps everything. I mean, it trumps coaching, it trumps, team chemistry. Talent wins in the NBA, and you have to have gamers, people that can take the game into their own hands, and we've seen it for years with Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, Shaq, whoever. No matter what you think about them as personalities or of people, they're just extremely gifted people that are, cold-blooded, competitors that will find a way to beat you, and I just feel like Brooklyn has, and LA, if they can get a little bit healthier, both those teams, there's just no other team that's talented enough to not beat the team off.
Yeah, and that's what concerns me, because I do think it's going to, there is a chance that it could be both of those teams based just purely on the roster on paper, not always based on anything else. Are there any teams out there that you look at as, hey, if they kind of figure some things out, they could challenge on either the East or the West? Is there a team out there you like? I look at Milwaukee, and I think Milwaukee, if they could just knock down some shots, Milwaukee could be a thorn in Brooklyn's side. I look at Utah, and I know we don't expect anything from Utah, but man, they can shoot it, and they run their offense so well. Maybe they could challenge. Are there any challengers out there even?
I agree with you. I think you mentioned the two that I would keep an eye on. And again, I think, Utah, because of their balance and the ability to shoot the ball and their ability to score from so many different areas. And then you throw in Rudy Gobert and his defensive mentality. And they have a couple other people that are committed to play defense. That's a nice, nice squad. That, it just depends on if any of those players, Donovan Mitchell, for example, if he truly has the ability to take the game over in the fourth quarter when you have to have somebody that can take the game over, I at times I think he has that ability, but you have to compare that to those other teams that just through their athleticism, their strength, as a team and as individuals, can they then take that away from the individual offensively because they're so committed defensively? That's where the NBA is so weird, because they just don't, commit to playing very hard or play defense for 72 games. Then all of a sudden you get into the playoffs and it's a totally different basketball game. You can't even compare the two, regular season to playoff. It's totally different. So, you really kind of have to throw the regular season, what you saw with Utah, Phoenix, some of these teams, the Clippers, maybe the Denver Nuggets because of what they've lost. You just kind of throw that out per se and say, okay, now let's talk about playoff basketball and what they bring to the table during the playoffs. And that's kind of different than what they bring during the regular season.
Coach, you brought up the Denver Nuggets. We're going to have to discuss them, I suppose, as painful as it's going to be. They really looked like they were hitting their stride back in March. They had traded for Aaron Gordon. It looked like they were clicking. Maybe they could be a contender, and then Jamal Murray blows his knee. Coach, is this just another example of the Nuggets can't have nice things? Because it just seems like every year it's something.
I swear that the Pepsi Center was built on top of some Indian tribal lands, or there's something funky going there. They just cannot catch a break, and Yeah, that, you know, Jamal Murray, he makes me frustrated at times, but I'm a huge Jamal Murray fan because of his work ethic and his.
He brings it every night.
He does. He plays so freaking hard that you just have to love that guy. And if there's anybody that deserves it and who wants it, it's Jamal Murray, because you can just tell that that guy truly wants it for him, his teammates, his coaches. And I truly believe he wants it for the state and city, you know, so I just love him. So for one guy to go down, you just think, okay, what is going on here? Who put the voodoo hex on that organization? Because it just seems to be, you know, it goes back to David Thompson and, you know, just year after year, decade after decade, there just seems to be something that just prevents us from taking the next step to being, you know, at the top of the NBA world. So yeah, I think, you know, and then you throw in Barton and PJ Dozier and, you know, on and on and on. It's just, you just sometimes just have to look at it like, okay, it's just not meant to be, you know.
Coach, I wonder if Mike Malone, their head coach, is meant to be, because I watch him sometimes and he leaves me scratching my head. I can't figure out his rotations. I can't figure out what he is focusing on. I don't understand Mike Malone half the time. I think he's a really good guy. I don't know if he's a really good coach.
Yeah, I'm like you. I think he's an awesome guy. Right now he's got those guys and he's got me as a fan so freaking confused because of the way he, rotates players. And, you know, right now, basically what he's done is he takes guys that he puts in, they finally get in a groove, and then for some unknown reason, they're out of the lineup and they don't play a game. They don't play a couple games, or they lose minutes in the rotation after they kind of gained a rhythm and confidence of playing with each other. Then all of a sudden he mixes it up again. And, you know, you'll see guys that play really well and they're going to blossom. And all of a sudden he buries them and you never see the guy again. It's just the most bizarre. I don't know if he's trying to be smarter than everybody, if he's trying to overcomplicate the game of basketball by trying to outthink it. But all he's done, I think, has caused confusion and doubt. And like I've said, and I just said earlier, the most important thing you have to have in your coach as a player is trust.
Yeah.
And I just feel like he's broken the trust of Jamichael Green. He's broken the trust of Paul Millsap. He's broken the trust of Najee, you know, the rookie from Bol Bol. You could see when they take the floor, they look apathetic and perplexed, you know. And as a fan, you get upset with the player, but then you think about what they've been through, where they perform really well, but it doesn't translate into more minutes or a role on the team because it's just helter-skelter. It's very, very, and I think that's why they're in real trouble with Portland. There's just so many quirky things that are being done that, you know, and Portland's figured out, you know, their coach, Stotts, was in big trouble. They're about ready to run him out of town this year. And the best thing that happened to him is that they had a bunch of injuries, so he's down to an 8-man rotation. And now they're playing great because the players know what their role is. They know they're going to get time. They don't have to guess about what's going on. And so the best thing that ever happened to him was that a lot of his players went down and he was forced to go to an 8-man rotation. And now they're playing great. So, you know, That it's just weird. The dynamics of the NBA are weird, and Michael Malone is a tremendous person, but I think he really struggles as a coach sometimes.
He confuses me, and I watch their games, and I don't understand what he's doing. Even when he has guys on the floor that make sense, he doesn't necessarily run things for them. But you get Michael Porter Jr. in there, and I'm saying, okay, feed this kid. Let this kid do what he does. He's obviously not a stopper, but we know what he does. He can score.
Yeah.
Puts him in bad positions. He almost has to force shots up, and I'm going, yes. I don't understand. It's just so confusing. And shoot, we're watching from the seats. I can't imagine what it's like to actually be on the floor and he's telling you these silly things to do. I'm watching Portland run, go on like an 11-2 run, and he didn't even take a timeout. Like the game management is so poor. And I don't know if Kroenke's care enough to make a change. So we might just be stuck with this no matter what.
I think you might hit the key, you have a ownership group that is basically focused on bigger and to them more important things in their worldwide empire. and the Nuggets are really an afterthought.
Right.
I think you're right. Yep.
That's disheartening because that's a team that has enough talent. They should be contenders, and I don't think they're going to be contenders. All right. Well, you already know then it's going to be Nets and Lakers. We can always just book it in the NBA because there are very few surprises in the NBA. We'll cheer for some. We won't expect any. Okay. Coming back. I still have a few things to get to today with Coach Mack, including we have some controversy in the NFL. Are we seeing maybe some racism over there? And is Aaron Rodgers going to be coming to Denver any second now? We're going to answer both of those questions and a few more when we get back. So today on The Dose, we've been talking to Coach Russ McKinstry. We have talked about the past year in COVID. We have talked about high school sports, college basketball, the NBA, and right now, we are going to jump into a couple of very interesting stories coming out of the NFL. Coach, I want to move over to the NFL in our final segment here, and I want to talk a little bit about some controversy that we have brewing in the NFL, because the Jacksonville Jaguars signed former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow to try him out as a tight end, not as a quarterback. And over on, you know, some of the big networks, ESPN, Screamin' A. Smith is telling us this is white privilege. Now, I maintain this is probably more his former college coach, Urban Meyer, gives him a shot at no risk whatsoever. They need a tight end. Tim Tebow is a big, strong kid that would bring leadership. He would bring toughness. And have you noticed this? Since all this Tebow talk has started, no one has mentioned the name Trevor Lawrence. He has taken all the pressure off that kid. No one's even talking about Trevor Lawrence. He has no pressure right now. They're all going to be staring at Tebow. Is this white privilege? What do we have going over there?
It's been fascinating to hear the people talk, especially, like you say, at the national level with the ESPNs and all the pundits who are nationally known experts. Again, I think sometimes they show their lack of understanding or maybe just lack of ever really being a competitive athlete. They're very good at what they do, but how many of them really were ever really in the fire? Or if they were, how long has it been since they were a part of a team or organization? Because I get it. And I know Tim's polarizing big time, but the kid's a winner, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't care what you say about him. The kid is a winner and he's an extremely good influence on teammates and, like you said, leadership, team chemistry. You know, he's made of all the right things. And so many of these people look at him as being out of control, that this is all about him and he just wants attention. It's a money grab. And that's where I think those people are extremely, uninformed, I think, or maybe jaded in their approach to viewing Tim and what he brings to the table and what he's accomplished. Because if you don't look at it out of pettiness and jealousy, and you just look at it on the merits of the person, what he's accomplished and what he's done. I mean, what did he do with the Broncos here? He's with the Broncos, the starting quarterback. You know, what he did as a minor league baseball player. I mean, you should be cheering and applauding this guy for what he has done, what he tries to do with his life, how he impacts other people. And, you know, when you see that his jersey's the number one selling jersey in the NFL currently, more so than Trevor Lawrence, you know, or anybody else, that isn't just random. That's not just a popularity contest. It's because of what he represents and how he's carried himself during his, you know, personal and collegiate and athletic careers, you know. So I'm a big fan and I totally understand why it took place and I'm pulling for the guy.
Well, you know, Coach, I contend that these situations in sports, and this is one of the reasons that you and I love sports. Sports rarely have anything to do with race on that level. Sports are the ultimate meritocracy. If you can play, you'll make it. If he can't play, he won't make it. He'll be gone. But here is one thing to keep in mind. Former players get stuff regardless of race. Antonio Brown and Michael Vick, they get chances other guys don't get. Isaiah Thomas, Magic Johnson, Steve Nash, they get coaching jobs that other guys coming through the ranks, they don't get. Why? Because they're former players. They have names. People love that stuff. You know the owner of Jacksonville, he loves that Tim Tebow name. They get things the rest of us don't get. They're special. The rest of the people aren't special. So that's why he gets these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, what we've been talking about. Life isn't fair. Get over it.
No, it's not.
You know, and we're not all going to be treated equally.
Yeah.
If that was the case, I guarantee you I'd be coaching the New York Knicks, living in a penthouse in Manhattan, living out the dream of running the team that I grew up loving, the New York Knicks. If life was fair, that's where I would be. But life isn't fair. I mean, and certain people get certain breaks, and, you know, you just have to be happy for them. And that's why I don't get why people have to be angry and upset and try and tear people down because of some of the fortune that they come across in their life. If Clint Daly wins the lottery,
and
I am going to, you know, jump for joy and do cartwheels for you. I'm not going to be pissed at you.
Right.
But it's amazing how many people view it that way.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you get fortunate and get a break in life? I can't stand you anymore. And that's disgusting. You know, I there's so much of that going on right now.
Yeah.
And that's really pointed at Tim Tebow. I do not understand that mentality.
It's very, very strange. It's very strange how much hate a kid gets that is genuinely seems like a pretty nice person. They say he's as nice off the screen and off the field as he is on. I don't understand it either, but I think people just like to hate things right now. I think it's just an angry world we're living. Coach, I've got one more story I want to get your thoughts on. It is a big NFL story. I have to ask you about it before you go, and that is the one of Aaron Charles Rodgers. Rumor has it he wants out of Green Bay. They say he is done playing football for that franchise. He hates the GM's guts, and they are saying a destination that could be on his list is the Denver Broncos. Coach, is this smoke? Could this happen? Should we start looking for parking along the Super Bowl parade route? What's going on? Is Aaron Rodgers out of Green Bay? What's going to happen there?
Oh, my gut says that somehow he ends up back at Green Bay. That's what my gut was telling me.
Too.
You know, I like to fantasize like we all do. You know, I can't imagine that Denver, Colorado, of all places, would be the home of John Elway, Peyton Manning, and then Aaron Rodgers. I don't think we could ever get the three triumphant, you know, who's who of quarterbacks to have played in our little cow town.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like to fantasize about it. I just have a feeling that, it probably isn't going to happen, but, you know, it helps that his new fiance is living in Boulder.
Yeah.
I think it's tailor made for him to come here and be successful. I don't know after we passed on Justin Fields, and I don't think that had anything to do with Aaron Rodgers, and I'm still mad about that. That kind of tells me that maybe George Payton doesn't have the wherewithal to pull this type of deal off if it was available to us. That's probably more of my concern than Green Bay finding a way to mend fences with Aaron. I'm just not sure George Payton would be willing to, you know, depart with three number ones and a Bradley Chubb and a Drew Lock to make it happen. I would do it in a New York second.
Oh, sure.
I wouldn't even hesitate. I would say, hey, what else can I give you in order to make this work?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just don't know if George Payton's built that way, especially after he passed on, you know, Mac Jones and specifically Justin Fields. I just don't know. Like we've always talked about, football personnel, football players are very, very stubborn and very set in their ways. And if you look at what he did at Minnesota, he's got a certain system, a certain way of doing things. I think it's successful. But when it comes to out of the box, being really creative, you know, it's like signing Kirk Cousins, you know, wow, okay, really, what'd you do? Is that really going to get you over the top? You know, in their mind frame, they think it is. In my mind frame, I'm thinking, well, whatever, you know, I'm going to go to bed and take a nap on that one, you know. So we'll see. I am so hopeful, but I'm not getting my hopes up.
I'm not either. And I keep going back to this. What's in it for the Packers?
Yeah.
Because you can't get equal value. You're not going to just get a Hall of Fame quarterback. We're going to go draft a Hall of Fame quarterback. It doesn't happen. So I keep looking at it from their perspective. I know when we cook these things up for like sports talk or you're at the bar with your buddies or whatever, you say, well, hey, we could get Aaron Rodgers and we wouldn't really have to give up that much. Well, then why would they do it? There's no reason for the Packers to do it. I wouldn't do it if I was them. I'd say too bad. You're staying here or else you're going to have to go host Jeopardy. because I'm not letting you leave. We have a Hall of Fame quarterback. You think we're going to let him walk for Drew Lock and a few picks? You're out of your mind. Coach, having said that, if Aaron Rodgers isn't the guy, what in the world are the Broncos going to do at quarterback?
You know, it's, and again, Drew Lock, you know, to this point, I think he faces some maturity issues and some decision-making dynamics that your elite quarterbacks possess that he doesn't seem to possess. And I'm hoping maybe his relationship with the Peyton Manning, his growing older. You know, to me, I've always said young adult men really don't start to really evolve mentally until they're about 25.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You know, and I've seen that over and over, in dealing with some of the basketball players I've coached and worked with. They really don't become men until they're 25. They look like men. You know, they're these huge beasts.
Yep.
They're athletic, strong, but mentally they're still 12 and 13 years old until they're about 25. So I'm hoping that something clicks for Drew. Teddy Bridgewater, kind of like Kirk Cousins, whatever. Okay. We'll go 9-8. We'll go, you know, 8-9, whatever, you know, maybe a wild card if we get really lucky. But, you know, the whole purpose to me is being, you know, in the final four. You know, sure. If I get to the final four and have a shot, then I consider that to be something to get excited about. I can't get excited about Teddy Bridgewater.
No, and I can't about Drew Lock either. Coach, here's the one concern I have about Drew Lock. When Elway came in, and I'm comparing him to Elway. I'm not comparing him to Elway. When Elway came in, he would make a play, even in a loss, even when he looked terrible, and you'd go, hey, that's special. When Peyton Manning came in, whoever, you'd go, man, he lost, and he's a rookie, and he looks like kind of a moron, but man, you can see that kid has something special. I have yet to see Drew Lock do anything special. He just looks like another moron. There's nothing that I go, man, he made a play that not many people can make. No, he didn't. I haven't seen that yet. I don't see anything to get excited about.
That's a great observation. No, I would agree. I keep waiting for that moment.
Right. I do too.
I think we all do. But now, you know, we're going into what three years of it and we still haven't seen it. That's got to be a big concern. And that's where I hope the Broncos are and their personnel and George Payton are like, hey, you know, this game has evolved into basically a 7-on-7 league ran by the quarterbacks.
Yep.
So if you don't have a top 5 quarterback, you just think you're not going to go anywhere. It's just not going to happen.
Coach, as usual, you make all the great points. You bring so much to us when you come on the show. I know that we haven't gotten together recently on the dose here, but we appreciate every single time you come in, talking some college basketball, some NFL, some NBA, whatever we have. You're always up to talk whatever. And not just that, but you're up to talk about life and how we are dealing with issues in our lives. Thank you so much for stopping by the dose. You come by anytime. You know you're always welcome.
Hey, as usual, awesome time. Love your insight and your observations. I always learn a lot from you and enjoy doing this with you guys very, very much. So thanks for having me on.
Hey, next week on The Dose, we will, of course, be keeping you up with all that is going on in the world of sports. And, you know, we just might have a very special announcement for you next week you are not going to want to miss. Plus, love sports news, and we just might have a Daily Dose Top 5 mixed in for you somewhere. So be sure that you stop by The Dose next week, and be sure you tell a friend to do the same. Hey, I have to say thank you so much to Russ McKinstry for stopping by and talking with us today. We always look forward to your visits, and I have to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails, for the texts, for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel and for giving us positive ratings wherever it is you watch or listen. But more than anything else, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next Wednesday.
It is embarrassing!